Welcome to Measuring Success Right, the official podcast of the Marriott Student Review, a podcast for students by students, where we connect the leaders of tomorrow with the issues of today.
Knowing the basic tools of financial literacy and the way that like credit works and the way that compound interest works, these are tools that can be helpful, but obviously it's not a one size fits all, and knowing these rules doesn't magically make you rich, but it's always a good reminder to know how to apply these skills in our lives and to just kind of see the way that money impacts the way that we're able to exist in the world.
Hello, and welcome to another episode of Measuring Success Right. My name is Spencer McWilliams.
And I'm Grant Frazier.
And today's episode is actually Measuring Success Bites.
Woo! Installment number two.
So Measuring Success Bites, if you haven't heard our other episode, is just a little series that we're doing that will go over the articles in the recent issue of the Marriott Student Review. If you haven't read it, go pick it up or visit marriottstudentreview.org to read the recent issue.
Mm-hmm. Tell your friends, post it on Instagram.
All the good stuff.
All the good stuff.
Today's episode, we are going to be reading and discussing the article titled Financial Literacy by a student named AJ Bollinger.
Mm-hmm. So Spencer, you kind of took the lead with this episode. So what did you get from this article?
Well, there was a lot of good points that AJ made in this article that, I mean, if you are familiar with financial literacy, it's kind of stuff that you already know, but it's a lot of good reminders, and it's really good for people who aren't familiar or are not even financial literate. And that is what AJ kind of touches on.
So as you know, I am a business student, so I had to take accounting, I had to take finance, and I don't know, I think that one of the things that I thought about as I read this article is, I know all of these principles about financial literacy, but I think like understanding what it means and actually living it in your day-to-day life are different things, and I'm excited to kind of explore some of the nuances in that with you.
Yeah, I remember in high school, it was required for us to take a personal financial literacy class in order to get our driver's license. I don't know. Was that the same for you in high school?
No, I didn't have that at all.
Must be an Oklahoma thing then.
Maybe.
So yeah, they required us to take like a personal finance course which I assume is just to help us be financially literate in high school. Sadly though, when I took it, I was really just excited to get my license and just to drive as a 16-year-old. So I did not really listen a lot to the modules and the course. And So
this is our chance to teach you then, I guess.
Well, well, I actually did take a family finance class recently at BYU. Family finance is a really great class for anyone to take. Doesn't matter what major you are, if you are wanting to learn more about family finance.
That's good. Yeah, it's in the name.
Yeah. So I did learn a lot of cool stuff here. But like I said, reading through this article reminded me of some good notes and reminders on how we can become more financially responsible, especially as college kids.
So I think one of the things that we wanted to talk about, and one of the things that stuck out to me, is the fact it notes that 40% of people in the United States don't meet the level of being financially literate. Like they don't have enough of a grasp on financial literacy. And I don't know, I wonder how they measure that, but also it doesn't surprise me a lot. I feel like there are a lot of people who think that business and finance and money is just like a kind of boring thing. And it is really boring, but I think we underestimate the way that finances really do affect like our life even outside of it, you know, like the trips we're able to take and the things we're able to do with friends. And I think like, I don't know, we interact with it every day when we drive our car and we go to our house or we're renting and we're paying bills. But financial literacy is just, it's an all-encompassing term, but.
Yeah, in the article, I know that AJ mentions that what it means to be financially illiterate, as in those who are not, you know, familiar and maybe not as don't know much about finances, is that he says, in other words, over half of the country's citizens completely lack important money management skills, such as budgeting and saving. So like you said, like finances kind of is in all our lives all of the time. So to hear that, you know, that percentage of Americans are financially literate is just very surprising.
Yeah. Do you have any budget plan in your life? Like, do you have like any strict rules you follow when you're trying to plan out your monthly expenses?
Yeah. So when I came to college, so after high school, when I finally went out on my own, became a college student, I actually did not have a budget. And I kind of learned from that in thinking, well, my parents were very gracious in helping me financially, but I didn't really realize the importance of a budget until I got married.
Mm. Okay, so that's I feel like I had kind of a similar experience my freshman year, you know, living in Helaman Halls. Didn't know how to cook for myself very well. I'd go to the Del Taco down the street a lot. And you realize pretty quickly that that adds up, you know? It's like a $6 burrito is, if you do that multiple times a week, that's a lot of money. That's
it
a lot of money
up.
That could go to meals that you make yourself. But yeah, so that's interesting. What types of budgeting experiences, like what types of skills did you have to learn once you got married and had to start making a budget?
Yeah, well, when my husband and I first got married, we tried a system where we would just use cash. So we made this little table in some kind of program. In Excel, I think. And we were able to put in our income from both of our jobs, or like our biweekly income, because that's when we got paid. Mm-hmm. And then we would, you know, separate it out for groceries, for entertainment. Like, we love going out to eat. So we separated like a budget for when we want to go out to eat every 2 weeks. Automobile payments, gas, you know, all of the necessities. And instead of keeping track of it on our card, we would go to the bank and we would withdraw, like, we had envelopes for each category. And so we would withdraw money for each category. That way we weren't just like using our card, because it's so easy just to take out your card and swipe it. Or if you have Apple Pay, that's
just
even
tap
worse.
Your phone.
That's,
you know, you don't have to. And honestly, it makes you kind of scared to look at your balance in your bank account.
I know.
It's like you don't even have to think about it.
Yeah.
But with cash, it's all right there in front of you. That's a really good idea. I like that a lot.
Well, we started off with that. And I can't say that we had, for after 2 years of being married, we have switched over to other things. But that was a really, especially like being first married and like living with someone and like sharing finances, because I think that's a big thing when you either get married or you just are sharing finances with someone. Yeah. You start living with someone. Yeah,
it's a great simple way to learn the skills, right?
Yeah, for sure.
I have a friend actually who did something similar, but they just go to the grocery store at the beginning of the month or once they get paid, and they get Visa gift cards. They just put all of their money onto gift cards, so it's like they can't spend more than X amount because they only have so much on their card, you know, and they just like keep track of those throughout the month. Same idea, you know, but more modern approach, you know, having like a little debit card instead of a cash, like in the 1990s.
No, that's a really good idea. Visa gift cards, that really does limit your paying. So Grant, as someone who isn't married and is a college student as well, what has budgeting looked like for you?
Maybe we don't need to talk about my personal life now. Budgeting is something that I've definitely had to learn as well. And it's something that I'm still learning. I think that it's definitely easier, I think, when you have someone to hold you accountable. And I've like set goals with my roommates before or my one roommate who I'm very good friends with, we kind of set a goal on like, we're not going to spend X amount of money this month, or we're going to save up this month. And I think like having someone who I'm accountable for or like accountable to helps me to save more than, you know, if I'm just by myself riding solo and I can, you know, go to the Wendy's just because it's on the way home or something. And you don't realize how much money you quickly spend doing that. I think I'm still learning. And I think that honestly, though, more than taking actionable steps to become financially literate, I just know all of these rules that I should be doing. And I just feel guilty all the time about not following them well enough. But I have a savings account, or I have the savings app Acorns, which is my favorite thing in the world. It's like it's an app that rounds up all of your purchases. So like if you spend $1.87, it puts 13 cents into a little investment portfolio.
Okay.
And then I have it take $10 out of my bank account every week. And so it's just slowly kind of building up over time. And I'm going to start putting more in, you know, but right now that's a start.
No, I think that's a really great start, and something that it just seems so easy and simple to use, especially if an app is going to be doing those auto like payments for it.
I like that I don't have to do any of it, because I am terrible at like setting a budget and sticking to it. But if I know that money's just taken out no matter what, I don't even think about it.
Yeah, that's very similar to the app Mint. Have you heard of that before?
Yeah, I think it's the same idea, but Mint is like a savings account, right?
Yeah, it like helps you keep a budget on your phone. So it like connects to your bank account, and it can see like what you've purchased on your bank account and kind of categorize it for you. So like you create your own budget, like how much you want to spend. I think it's either monthly or weekly, and then it'll keep, like track your bank account and show you like, okay, you've spent too much in this category this month, or you've spent too, or you had a lot more money left in this, which I feel like is barely, like would not look like that on our budget, but.
No, that makes sense. That's a good idea. Also, there's some app recommendations for everyone, I guess. If Acorns and Mint would like to sponsor the show, please send us an email.
Yeah. So there's like, as we just mentioned, there's like a couple of things that a lot of us can do and others that maybe aren't financially literate that they can do to become financially literate. And so AJ gives a three concepts of how we can understand financial literacy and how we can apply it to our lives and be more aware of it.
Well, please tell us the three.
Yeah.
I'm dying to know.
So he said, to understand financial literacy means to understand the following three concepts: the perils of financial burden, the benefits of gaining financial power, and the main reasons that financial literacy is so essential. So the first one is financial burden. And something that he mentions in his article is credit cards.
Yes.
Do you have a credit card, Grant?
Yes, I do, actually. I have the Wells Fargo college credit card. I just got it a couple months ago. Building up some credit.
I think the college credit cards are awesome because they are easy to apply for because you don't necessarily need to have any other kind of credit to get it because they understand that this is most likely your first credit card.
Yeah.
And what's also nice about college credit cards is depending on who you applied it with, they'll give you like incentives or like rewards for either like, I think it's paying on time, or I've even seen like getting good grades.
Oh, wow.
Which I'm
really?
Like, oh, that seems very like, I don't know, parental of them.
Yeah, so that's so fun. Yeah, I don't think my card does that, though. I get, like, you know, points back, and I think that's the beauty of a credit card. If you pay it off on time and you're responsible with it, is if you're able to put some purchases on the credit card, then you're able to build up points, and mine gives me 1% cash back, I think, you know, so you slowly get a little bit of money back just for spending money on things you already do. It's like just a discount for life, you know?
I know. Yeah, credit cards can be really great to use, but then they can also be a burden to you. Investopedia states that today, credit cards are more frequently used today. And I can totally see that with like online shopping and whenever, I mean, I work at a retail store and barely anyone uses cash. Anyone gives. And whenever they do, they always apologize. They're like, oh, sorry, I'm so old that I'm using cash. And I'm like, you're not though. Like it's kind of good that you're using cash.
Yeah, it's responsible.
Yeah. But what's important about credit cards is that depending on your usage of it, whether it's good or bad, can affect your credit score.
The dreaded credit score.
Yes.
You know, the impossible to understand and kind of confusing number that controls your ability to get a house, you know?
Yeah. When I looked up what a credit score was, because I know, like, as a young adult, when I hear credit score, I'm like, yeah, it's those the three-digit numbers that can determine whether you are, I don't know, you have
able
good
to get
credit.
A loan, able
yes.
to get a house, you know,
yeah.
it affects a lot of things.
Yeah. But what Wikipedia says is that a credit score is a numerical expression based on a level analysis of a person's credit files to represent the credit worthiness of an individual.
And they're actually, I don't know, they're kind of difficult to understand. And that's because it's not like a public utility or anything. It's made by private companies, usually like credit companies. And so their methods and the way that they determine it isn't always super clear. But basically, it's just how well does this person pay back their credit? But it's also like, is this person using credit? Because if you don't ever put anything on your credit card, and if you don't ever like take out a loan or anything, then you actually, it doesn't help your credit score, you know?
Yeah.
So like you do need to use credit and then show that you pay it off after you take it out. So
yes.
That's kind of the secret sauce of it, but it is difficult to understand for a lot of people who are first getting a credit card or something.
Oh yeah, for sure. And I think that's why you need to do some good research on like what you should do when you're thinking about getting a credit card or things that you should be aware of. So CNBC actually released an article that talked about like when getting a credit card, these are the things that you should be aware of. And these are just a couple things. They listed some other things, but I felt like this is what would apply to most of our audience as it is typically young adults. So, well, the first one was that you want to make sure you know what you're signing up for.
Do tell. You mean the interest rate, the, yes, like the credit limit as well, right?
Yes. You want to make sure you know what the interest rates are, if there's any fees, such as like an annual fee that you have to pay, the how much credit you're given or how much money essentially that you can spend, even though you have to pay it back.
Yes. That's the important part to remember,
yes.
Everyone. You got to pay that back.
I remember when I was taking my family finance class and we were talking about credit cards. I thought I had like known what credit cards were, but then I was like, wait, like, because my husband had just gotten a credit card for us, or primarily in his name, but and he said, okay, we have $1,000 limit on it. And I was like, what? Like, that means we can get like, and I think there was an incentive, like you have to use the 1,000 by this time and then
you get some reward.
Yeah.
Right?
And I was like, oh my gosh, like, let's go get this. Like, I need a new like headphones and I need some new shoes. And then he was like, yeah, but we have to pay it back. And I'm like, okay, but then like,
so it's not even real money, right? It's it's a scam. No.
But, you know, knowing about like the interest rates on it and then learning that like, you know, if you don't pay it back, if it's a very high interest rate, it's gonna bite you in the bottom if you don't end up paying it back.
100%. And I think people don't recognize, I don't know, I think like the percentage can seem like a small number, even if it's like 10% or something. But, you know, if you have $400 that you don't pay off, then that's now you owe $440 at the end of the month if you don't pay that. So it really can become like a terrible cycle very quickly of just that debt compounding on itself.
Mm-hmm. So that's why it's important that you should like shop around when applying for one. You know, you can do it with your bank or you can do it with or I think another bank, right? Could you apply?
Yeah, it doesn't need to be from your bank that you like do your debit card with.
Yeah, you could even do it with retail stores that offer credit cards. You know, when you go to a store and they say, would you like to sign up for our credit card? And typically you say no. If you want to, you could say yes.
You could say yes. You could get a Kohl's or a Bed Bath & Beyond credit card for your first one if you wanted to. I think it's a weird choice, but
Bed Bath & Beyond, Kohl's, any store that you want to sign up for it, you can. Just make sure you know what you're signing up for and read that pamphlet that they give you. So the next thing that CNBC talks about is that as college students, carry a college student credit card, just like Grant.
Yes. So I have already followed CNBC's advice. I should be writing articles for them.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. This is your opportunity. Okay. And then the next one is pay your bill on time in full.
Mm-hmm. That's good advice. That is good advice. Don't carry a balance on the card over the end of the month or the period. It's not worth it.
It may look tempting just to pay, you know, just like the minimum of like, okay, I'll just put like a little bit of money there and then like I'll just wait a few weeks. You want to make sure you get that paid in full. That way the interest rate does not, like I mentioned before, bite you in the bottom because it'll add up and then you'll end up paying more than what you're actually supposed to. But what's nice about it is that depending on the card issuer, there is a grace period that varies with it. The grace period is the period between the end of a billing cycle and the date your payment is due. So during this time, you're not charged interest as long as you pay your balance in full by the due date. So that's another thing to make sure that you check with your card issuer is to know what the grace period is. That way, when you're making your payments, you don't have to freak out if you didn't get it by the end of the billing cycle, but know that you still have some more time.
Mm-hmm. These are all good tips about credit cards.
I know.
Absolutely. I'm learning a lot. This is stuff I should know with my card.
So, Grant, do you feel more confident in your knowledge of credit cards?
I do. And I know not to spend all of my credit limit. I know to pay that off every month. And I don't know, honestly, like that's most of what there is to it. You know, if you pay off your credit every month, then your credit score is probably going to improve.
Yeah, for sure. And I know some of those tips may have been a little, I don't know, overwhelming. But, you know, don't be afraid to use it because it's a good thing, but also just be responsible. So the next concept that AJ talks about in his article is financial power. And what he mentions in his article under financial power is the power of investing. Mm-hmm. So Grant, you mentioned with Acorn that you have like you've been able to put it into an investment account, correct?
Mm-hmm.
Do you want to talk a little bit more about investing and other things that you've been doing with
resident business major in this room? I'd love to talk about I will always talk about investing. Nobody ever wants to talk about it. But yeah, I mean, like just in the same way that your credit card, you'll kind of accrue more debt over time by not paying it off. When you're able to put money into an investment portfolio, you get compound interest from that. So the stock market, usually more or less, you get about a 10% return from it every year. So like for every $100 you put in, you'll make about $10 just from that money in there. And I mean, so that $110 the next year then has another 10% return on it. So that 110, even if you don't put more money in, turns into 121, then the next year, 133. And so just slowly over time, that money will grow on itself. And so that's the beauty of it. And so if you're able to put money into an investment portfolio every month, not only are you like saving your money, but you are making more money. And I think something that's important to note, if I can get on my soapbox for a second, is that not only like, I think people think of investing as something that's risky or something that is like, I don't know, maybe just for people who are fancy. But the thing is, if you put your money into a savings account, then there are people who are investing their money. And with the way that like inflation in the US works is every single year, the dollar is worth a little bit less. And so if your money's in a savings account, it's not just not growing, it's shrinking a little bit every year. So savings is incredibly important. And I think it's important. I set like 50% of my money into savings and 50% into a very balanced, moderate investment portfolio. So that's my soapbox, though, is investing isn't just for rich kids in their Teslas. You know, investing is something that everyone should do. And it can seem daunting, but something like Acorns, or, you know, there are other apps, but like that let you just have a portfolio where you don't have to be choosing individual stocks. It's a great way to just help your money grow a little bit and help you plan for retirement.
Yeah. And I think another good thing to remember about that is to make sure that it is low risk and that the slow growth is okay. And if you want it to get, if you want to get rich faster, it's going to take a lot. It's going to be a lot more riskier. Mm-hmm. So that's something else to weigh in the risk factors between, you know, investing it, like you said, in moderate portfolios and not being too risky with your investments.
Yeah. I mean, we're not getting too into the weeds, but you know, there's day trading where you're trying every single day to go into the stock portfolio and like choose, I'm going to invest in Microsoft today and hope it moves up a dollar and then sell it at the end of the day. But I mean, I think the more responsible way to invest is to just kind of choose a bunch of different companies that don't really relate to each other and put money into them. So if one stock has a bad day, the rest of your stocks are still doing well. That's what, you know, the term you always hear, the buzzword from business students, like diversify your assets, diversify your portfolio. So it's a basic high level for anyone who doesn't know about stocks, but I figure people have some knowledge, at least with the way Robinhood has been in the news in the last like year or two.
And I think it's never too late to start. And I think because when I hear of some teenagers talking about like investing, I'm like, oh, I never even knew what that was when I was a teenager. But I think it's great. Like if you are just thinking about it, just start right now.
Yeah. Well, some teenagers are definitely just throwing their money into GameStop. That's not great. I would recommend, if we're talking about financial literacy, I don't think that's necessarily the best move, but investing is not scary, and it is kind of made out by some to seem like it has to be super complicated, but it really can just be as easy as an app that throws it into a super safe portfolio, and you get 10% return on that money every year.
Yeah. So I think a hot tip for that is just to make sure you educate yourself on these kind of different strategies for investing.
And if somebody tells you to invest all your money in GameStop, go to somebody else.
Yes.
Well, so, okay, I gave my spiel about financial power, and I think I think the thing about like the main idea that we want to drive home, we're talking about some of the nitty gritty of like credit cards and, you know, the power of investing. But really the idea is just, when you are caught in the cycle of paying off your credit card, it's a big stressor. You know, it can lead to like a higher rate of divorce. It leads to higher blood pressure. It leads like you to just be more stressed out all the time. And if you're able to create a strategy where you can put some money away and save instead of spending the money upfront on a credit card, it feels empowering. Like I know when I'm good at savings and I don't use my credit card, it feels better to know that I have money there if I need it and that I can just kind of go throughout my day not having like a worry in the back of my head about money that I owe.
It's definitely empowering. I love that you said that.
Well, thank you. Yeah, financial power.
So understanding the financial burdens and understanding what empowers us in finance, it is also important to understand that financial literacy is essential. Mm-hmm. And AJ says in his article, he quotes Damian Lovett, who is an overseer of the financial education program at the University of South Florida, that said, financial literacy is important because it's pretty much one of the things that will encompass just about every aspect of a person's life. So what I love about that is that it, like we mentioned earlier in the podcast, finances are just in our life every single day. Like Grant said, as we drive our car, as we go to the grocery store, as we are maybe doing our online shopping retail or online shopping therapy because we just, you know, we just love shopping so much.
That's an investment in yourself. I think that counts. Yeah, that's true. An investment.
Yeah. But it's true. And being aware of how we can be more responsible in taking care of our finances will help us feel more freedom in our life. Because I know that if we're dealing with any kind of finance struggles, it's really hard to feel like you can do anything because, like Grant says, it brings a lot of stress into your life and it feels like you can't really do anything because you're stuck having to pay off your credit card or pay off your car or pay off your home, like all of these big purchases that mm-hmm. bless our life but also can make us really stressed out.
Yeah. And I think it's always important to know, you know, as we kind of come to a close here, that financial literacy is incredibly important, but there are like real situations that happen that are outside of a person's control. And 10% of people in the United States live below the poverty line. And so for somebody making $30,000 a year, but they have two kids, they're going to have to take out loans sometimes, you know, even just to like rent a place. So it's a situation that's not one size fits all. And I think it's important, you know, we're sitting here talking about pay off your credit card on time. And that's a lot easier said than done sometimes. But I also think it's important that to note that sometimes people who are in debt haven't been given the education and the resources that can help them to create budgets. And honestly, sometimes it's just really hard to budget. You know, when you have a very busy life, especially for people working like 50 plus hours a week, it's impossible to just think that you can, I don't know, come home every night and want to tap on your Excel sheet. You know, like, yeah, I know that that's hard for some people. But the point being is that like knowing the basic tools of financial literacy and the way that like credit works and the way that compound interest works, these are tools that can be helpful, but obviously it's not a one size fits all. And knowing these rules doesn't magically make you rich, but it's just, it's always a good reminder to know how to apply these skills in our lives and to just kind of see the way that money impacts the way that we're able to exist in the world. I think a lot of financial literacy education and resources online can sometimes not mention the fact. It's like, well, what do you do if you don't make enough money to
even
pay it off?
Yeah, it's true.
Right? So that's, I think that's important to note.
Yeah. Understanding those basic tools can definitely help us and help us try our best. Mm-hmm. So we're just trying our best here.
Amen.
Okay. Well, thank you so much to AJ for writing this incredible article that allowed us to talk about financial literacy and discuss all the great things that encapsulate it. So thank you, AJ, and thank you to everyone who is listening today.
And we will see you all next week. Go check out these articles at MarriottStudentReview.org and take it easy.
Bye.
Make sure you subscribe to our podcasts on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, Google Play, or SoundCloud so you never miss an episode. Be a friend and tell a friend about measuring success right.
This podcast is a project of the Marriott Student Review at Brigham Young University. You can find us on Instagram, Twitter, and Facebook at Marriott Student Review or online at MarriottStudentReview.org.
The views and opinions expressed in this podcast do not necessarily reflect official policy or position of Brigham Young University or The Church of Jesus Christ of Latter-day Saints.